And we continue at 107 in the afternoon. Talk Radio 790 KABC, The John Phillips Show. Broadcasting live in exile from the Morongo Casino Resort and Spa Living Room Studio. And it's time to fully reopen the state of California for business. Mr. Randy Wang's at the sports desk in Culver City.
John, we've got a juicy Bay Area lawsuit. An elderly Asian man who was the victim of a violent hate crime is suing San Francisco District Attorney Chase Boudin for giving his attackers a slap on the wrist.
Good for him.
It's a fantastic story, and I hope this thing goes all the way up the food chain, because Chase Boudin is denying federal rights to victims of hate crimes because, you know, we got to get to the root causes of why someone beat an old man with a baseball bat.
Well, if you want to get to the root causes, you got to call Kamala. If they're successful with that lawsuit against him in San Francisco, then maybe we can do the same thing down here against George Gascon.
Well, and interestingly, the more coverage that this case gets, it also puts Rob Bonta in a really weird position, because his number one stance outside of aligning with George Gascon and Chase Boudin is going after hate crimes, especially of Asian hate crimes, which this is, which Chase Boudin isn't prosecuting.
It is a pleasure to welcome our next guest to the program. He is a former senator, former member of the California Senate, former member of the California Assembly and county supervisor, Senator Roy Ashburn. Senator Ashburn, welcome.
Thank you, John. Great to be with you.
Let's start by talking about what the mayor of Los Angeles, Eric Garcetti, just said to PPIC at one of their symposiums, where he was asked a question about California losing population, losing a congressional seat, and he said that people here are happy. They're happy with their quality of life. They're happy with the leadership at City Hall. And I wouldn't read too much into the fact that we lost a congressional seat. People here are peachy.
Well, clearly, Mayor Garcetti and many other Democrats, and especially those in the so-called progressive wing, are out of touch. That's the only way you can describe that kind of a comment. Completely divorced from reality. Californians feel trapped. The only reason people are not fleeing the state in greater numbers is that they have ties here through their employment or through their family or through some other connection. But given the state of this state, people are eager to look elsewhere, and things are not peachy and rosy and all well. Things are terrible in California and getting worse.
One of the things that drives people crazy is the hypocrisy. Newsom shut down the restaurants in most counties in California and then showed up to his friend's birthday party at the very swanky French Laundry, where they ate very expensive food and drank expensive wine. Nancy Pelosi supported the mask mandate and the shutdown of hair salons, yet she was able to go to her hair salon in San Francisco and not wear the mask. We're now being told in Los Angeles County that we should only attend essential services, that we shouldn't test to party, so we could attend a viewing party of one of the NFL playoff games or a birthday party or graduation party or wedding or whatever the case may be, because the tests are in such short supply that testing to partying is something that we shouldn't do. Barbara Ferrer said that. Yet at the same time that they're saying that, they don't want to lose out on the money that the Super Bowl's bringing to town, so they're going to let people fly into Los Angeles from all over the globe and watch a football game in a packed stadium because they don't want to miss out on that revenue. When people hear that they can't invite their friends and family over to watch the game on TV because we don't have enough tests, but it's okay for people to fly in and watch it live and in person at a packed stadium, it makes people go mad.
People are mad. They're just beside themselves with this never-ending rules, regulations, contradictions, and hypocrisy, all connected with the coronavirus. For most people, they're over it. They're past it. They figured it out, especially with the latest variant. If you've had a vaccine and a booster, or if you had COVID prior and didn't even know it, the symptoms are going to be very mild. The chances of dying are very limited, and they're just as they were at the very beginning of the coronavirus. The serious health consequences are limited to people who are very elderly or have some compromised health problem. And so I think most people have figured it out. They're ready to move on. But now we're into a whole new phase of this where clearly those who are in power are more interested in exercising their power than they are in any kind of sense of normalcy. And so many folks are paying the consequences of that, not the least of which are our children, who are, you know, in a class, out of a class, behind a Zoom, one day a mask, another day some other requirement. And this has just been devastating for kids.
How much of this never-ending pandemic can be attributed to the fact that for all the problems that now exist in the world, whether it's the supply chain crisis, inflation, crime, homelessness, whatever the case may be, they blame it on COVID. And once they blame it on COVID, they just say, what can you do? It's a pandemic. It's not our failed policies that produced the homeless crisis or produced this crime wave. It's not Prop 47 or a bunch of judges that let everyone out of prison. None of that has to do with any of this. It's all the virus. The virus seems to give them an out card for every problem facing the state. And I don't see them giving that up anytime soon, do you?
Well, it worked very well for them in the last election. Certainly it had an impact on the presidential election. But I think that argument and excuse is wearing very thin. Increasingly, the public is onto it. People are more sophisticated than that, understanding that all of the issues that you cited and many more are attributable to governmental policy. In almost every instance, it has to do with the policies of the government, not a virus and the reaction. And so much of the government involvement in the virus reaction has caused many of these problems. The reason that the economy is sick is because businesses are having a horrible time under the weight of the regulations and the cost. Now inflation, the Biden inflation, is absolutely devastating. And if you follow the argument that is currently being pushed in Washington by the Biden administration folks, well, this inflation only affects wealthy people and their well-being. Well, I hate to tell you, but for working people, for the working Californians, this inflation is devastating. The cost of gasoline is just through the roof, and now that price is reflected in items in the grocery store, if those items are even available in the store, because the trucking is so much more expensive. We've got an absolute gridlock at the ports, and no solution whatsoever being offered by this administration. I can't help but think that if this port problem were given the proper attention and all of the regulations and rules that are in place that give special consideration to all the various players in the movement of goods that come into the United States, this thing could be cleared up in no time at all.
You know, in the state of California, so much of our budgeting is based on the very wealthy in the state doing well with the stock market, doing well with real estate. Certainly the success of Silicon Valley fills state coffers in Sacramento. And as long as they're doing good, Sacramento has enough money to pay its operating costs. However, when the economy is volatile and the stock market is volatile and Silicon Valley is volatile, that means Sacramento doesn't have regular money, dependable money, rolling in to pay for all of these services that the legislature and Gavin Newsom have decided that we're going to spend money on. looking at how volatile the stock market was yesterday and looking at how many problems, not just in the United States, but globally, the supply chain crisis, inflation, all of those things, remain storm clouds on the horizon. If you were in Sacramento today and you know that you've got budgets to put together next year, the year after that, the year after that, how nervous would you be right now that the planning that's being done in Sacramento will not be sufficient for the crash that's coming?
Well, my experience from Sacramento, having served in the legislature for 14 years, is that the sight is very short. Looking ahead almost never exists. It's satisfy the political need today. Buy off a constituency or two to maintain your power. And unfortunately, that is going to is never a good policy, but that's the way that, Sacramento seems to operate. And it's even worse today. There is just no constraint on the spending in the state, and there are storm clouds on the horizon. There are serious problems coming for California and for the nation. The inflation alone is completely and totally unsustainable, and the public knows it, and they're being squeezed. Any increase in income that an individual or a family might be experiencing is completely wiped out before it even is shown in the paycheck. And this is going to have dire consequences. California, for way too long, has been dependent upon the taxes that are the most vulnerable, the most susceptible to economic ups and downs. And despite many, many efforts to restructure the tax system in our state, it's always been pushed aside, especially when the special interests become involved in the conversation.
Gavin Newsom has ambitions beyond being governor of California. Knowing this, knowing that he wants to be president someday or vice president or some big-time cabinet official, he can't have a budget that absolutely wrecks his political career. He can't be the guy that cuts the schools. He can't be the guy that cuts health care. He can't be the guy that has to bring in austerity to Sacramento. How do you see him handling this when this happens? He seems like the most ill-prepared person in the world to deal with a crisis like this.
Well, he's second in being ill-prepared to the vice president, Kamala Harris. And his fate will be the same as hers. He has no future. People like this who have no understanding of the fundamentals of an economic system, who don't have any concern for any kind of restraint in the satisfaction of the loudest voices who are in the distinct minority in terms of the real concerns of Californians and people in the country. There is no future there.
One of the subjects I flipped on, and I acknowledge this, are term limits. Initially, you look at people like Ralph Dills, who were serving in the legislature. I mean, that guy was there since the New Deal, and he still served in the legislature in the 90s. His mind was gone, and he looked like Liberace, but the guy was still a sitting member of the California Senate. Since term limits were implemented, there's been a brain drain up there. And I look at the crowd that's running the show today, and I say to myself, for all the problems that we had in the 90s, we would all be so much better off if Pete Wilson was still governor and Willie Brown was running the legislature. Do you believe that, too?
Oh, absolutely. Term limits are a terrible Republican idea, just a god-awful Republican idea. And they have completely destroyed the citizen legislature. The idea, sounds just the opposite, that if you have term limits, you're going to have more people from real life who would be willing to serve for a brief period of time and do good for California. It doesn't work that way. So what happened immediately are that, some of the best people, the people with the most knowledge and experience, they departed, and with them went a lot of the staff. You know, I hate to lean so much on the staff, but a lot of the expertise in the administration of government resides with staff because there's a consistency there. Well, staff type people don't like uncertainty, and they don't like the ups and downs and volatility. And so they, in the wake of a term limited legislature, they left, and they went where? They went to the lobbying side. And so the special interest side gained in power, and the citizens, the real people of California, they lost. And so before term limits, the average length of stay for a member of the legislature was 6.5 years. So now under term limits, the length of stay is 12 years. And so I would submit that we've gained nothing and we've lost a lot.
Former California Senator Roy Ashburn, thank you so much for stopping by and loaning us your expertise. We learn so much every time we chat.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be with you and your listeners.
Coming up in moments, Randy is going to have his moment in the sun because he gets to talk about his favorite show that's now back on YouTube.
Our learning spaces are special places.
Isn't that right, Randy?
She's back.
But let us keep it real.
And she wants more money.
Everyone is having all of the feels.
Get out your wallets, kids. Cecily Myart-Cruz wants all the dead presidents in your pocket. For once, someone in Los Angeles is digging through your pockets, and it's not Rick Jacobs. It's Cecily Myart-Cruz.
That is fantastic.
Those details, and we'll tell you what the Queen Bee wants coming up in moments. But before we get to the Queen Bee of LAUSD, Randy, you've got an update for us on restaurants.
Nate Silver at 538 just posted this. Open Table, which is the restaurant reservation software, they put out an interesting set of numbers. They showed restaurant reservations in January of 2022 as opposed to January 2019 in a whole bunch of different cities all around the country. And compared to 2019, Miami is actually up 14% right now since pre-pandemic. Vegas is up 1%. Los Angeles restaurant reservations in 2022 as opposed to 2019 down 41%. Manhattan 64%. San Francisco 66%.
There you go. It's not a hard lockdown anymore. It's a soft lockdown. And you know who you have to thank for that in Los Angeles County.
No, thank you.
Your favorite fake doctor and mine.
This is interesting. If you go to Open Table's state of the industry, their top performers, the places that are using their app the most, making the most reservations, Mexico.
I'll tell you, you go down to Mexico, it's like COVID never happened. The only reminder that COVID was around when I was in Mexico this last time is that people were buying pallets full of toilet paper at Costco. Outside of that, they're back to normal in Mexico. God bless them for that. 800-222-KABC is the telephone number, 1-800-222-5222. Now, Cecily Myart-Cruz, who is the Queen Bee of LAUSD, she is the head of UTLA, which is the union that represents the teachers, which means she, not the superintendent, not the Board of Education, the school board, she is calling the shots.
Our learning spaces are special places.
And Randy, she's got a lot to say.
We haven't heard from Cecily Myart-Cruz in quite some time, but now that UTLA is a few weeks away from renegotiating yet another contract with LAUSD, and there's all this COVID money up for grabs, she had to do another episode of her fabulous YouTube show to tell UTLA members to vote for this plan to get all of LA's money at once.
That's right. Let's listen to Cecily Myart-Cruz in her own words.
First, she wants to tell us about the tough times these teachers are having with the Omicron.
There is no sugarcoating the moment we are in. These are tough times. Everyone is being asked to do more at a time when some of us aren't sure there's any more gas left in the tank.
Oh, God. Okay, so this is clearly written for her by someone else.
At a time when some of us aren't sure there's any more gas left in the tank.
I love that.
You know what that sounds like? Do you remember back in high school when you're taking Spanish class and you got to read the sentence? And you're having a tough time because you don't know how the words are pronounced correctly. So you kind of go through each word at once, and it doesn't make any sense if you're trying to speak the language, but you get it done correctly.
That's what that sounds like?
Yeah.
Let's hear that one more time.
Everyone is being asked to do more at a time when some of us aren't sure there's any more gas left in the tank. School families are dealing with logistical hurdles and on-the-ground realities that change by the day. Educators are covering classes, giving up planning periods, and taking in students on a moment's notice after a teacher tests positive. Health and human service professionals are triaging the overwhelming student need for social, emotional, and mental health support. The fatigue and the fear are real.
So the answer to solving Omicron is we need more therapists.
And the fatigue is real.
Fatigue and the fear are real.
Yeah, let's scare all the parents into sending their kids back.
Boo! Don't send your kid back to school.
But of course, this is not a doom and gloom kind of show at UTLA. This is meant to inspire and have members rise up and grab the wallets of the taxpayer for even more of your money. And here is Cecily Meyer-Cruz laying out those steps.
I want to talk about next steps. We must play defense as well as offense.
You mean offense to the people that live in this city?
No, offense to the taxpayers who fill up the coffers for the city.
It can be hard to look ahead when we are struggling to survive the day. But as
struggling to survive the day? How dramatic can you be?
Well, if you've seen your average LAUSD teacher, there's a lot of comorbidities there.
Oh, there's a lot of comorbidities, but they're not on ventilators, for heaven's sake.
But as I always told my students, those who fail to plan should usually plan to fail.
Oh, God. Oh, she should write for Hallmark.
The LAUSD budget for this school year has increased by more than $5 billion with a projected unrestricted reserve of $2 billion by the end of the school year. With UTLA contract negotiations beginning with LAUSD later this spring, we have a historic opportunity to get the district to allocate the significant increases to the schools that our students deserve.
Well, okay, like, you know, to the schools means to her members.
Yeah, she doesn't want it to, you know, improve the infrastructure in the schools. She wants it so they can have even bigger pensions that are already bankrupting the city.
That's right. Her passion for not working is only eclipsed by her passion for raiding the budget.
And she gives a shout out to a website where they've got their entire proposal out there for all 33,000 UTLA teachers to look at. And it says, we are ready to fight for, and here are the top four things that they're ready to fight for. Salary increases for all educators and accelerated advancement to the highest salary possible. Salaries for school nurses that are competitive with private sector positions. Greater pay equity and working conditions for adult educators. Expanded compensation for extra duty work. They want more and more and more money without any accountability.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll play the sound for you of Cecily Meyer-Cruz laying out her 7-point plan to take every last dollar that remains in your pocket. I guess we could call this segment another apple for the teacher. Because UTLA president Cecily Meyer-Cruz wants your money, and she wants it now, and she wants service with a smile.
But let us keep it real.
And Randy, she's got a plan.
This is her 7 pillars of a plan to get every last dime out of the LAUSD.
So let me lay out the 7 key pillars. Number 1, we will fight for fully staffed schools through measures that attract and retain educators.
That means more money.
The demands of the pandemic have deepened the crisis in our profession. A recent poll found that 48% of educators are considering leaving their jobs.
Well, they're probably considering leaving their jobs in Los Angeles for the same reasons that everyone else wants to leave town. Because your politicians, the politicians you support, have ruined the place.
Well, and you probably have some teachers that love 2020 so much, they're looking for a school district that will offer remote learning all the time.
We demand higher pay and better working conditions.
Wait, I might just need to isolate this.
We demand higher pay. Oh,
God. That might need to get used at some point.
We demand higher pay.
Oh, voice like a bird.
And better working conditions for all educators, from early ed to K-12 to adult ed. Number 2. We will fight for...
So the first pillar of the most important thing facing the teachers is, give us more money.
Number 2, we will fight for equitable access to opportunity for all students. This is a fact. The supports our students need to succeed are the supports...
Hey, there's a rhyme.
Let me hear it one more time.
The supports our students need to succeed.
The need to succeed.
Are the supports you need to do your work. The platform includes urgent demands for lower class sizes, reduced caseloads, more support for special education.
Okay, all of this means hiring more people. You reduce the class size. You go from 30 kids to 15 kids. That means you need 2 teachers for the class that used to have 1 teacher.
So you're telling me pillar 1 and pillar 2 are more money?
Pillar 1 is paying the people who exist in the system more money. Pillar 2 is hiring more people into the system to pay her more union dues.
And a school district that's bleeding students left and right.
More learning time and less standardized tests.
Oh, and no accountability.
That's the cherry on top of the sundae.
More learning time and less standardized tests. And critical investments in ethnic studies, culturally relevant curriculum, and vocational learning.
What does that mean?
Well, remember when she said the kids don't need to learn their times tables as long as they learn what a protest is.
Number 3, we will fight for equitable access to technology.
What was that?
Play that again.
We will fight for equitable access to technology.
Bless you.
Did someone sneeze or did a cat fall out of a tree?
I don't know what that was.
To technology. The pandemic amplified the digital divide, leaving many of the students we serve struggling with unreliable internet services and unequal access to technology.
Isn't this the same school district where we bought everyone an iPad?
How'd that work out for us? I know that online bullying exploded, and I'm sure they enjoyed the porn, but how about the academics?
Well, we contracted that software out, and that didn't actually work.
LAUSD must meet this basic need in our connected society by providing updated tech to all students and staff and helping ensure that all students and families have reliable internet service.
Can you imagine her back in the old days giving this speech to a bunch of guys in powdered wigs with wooden teeth and saying, we need these abacuses and we need them yesterday. You got that?
Number four, we will fight for safe school climate. With all the trauma and challenges facing our students, LAUSD must build a safe school climate that does not criminalize our kids.
So that means getting rid of the school police.
That means not only do you need to give us more money, but take all the money that you were going to spend on the LAUSD Police Department and give that to us too.
Yeah, I could imagine those campuses being real safe without any supervision.
But instead, helps to meet their needs. That means investing in de-escalation techniques, trauma-informed teaching, programs for at-risk students, and creating a safe, clean, and welcoming school site.
Without any police.
And in art class, they can just do the chalk outlines around the bodies. We're going through UTLA's demands to the LA Unified School District. And Randy, I wonder when they send them the text of these demands, if they'll just type it out on a computer or they'll cut the letters out of the newspapers and the magazines like a hostage note.
It sure does sound like they're holding the kids ransom. So far we've had give us more money, hire more teachers, give us more money, give us more money, defund the police. What else do you think is in her demands?
Oh, you forgot critical race theory.
Oh, there was that too.
Number five, we will fight for healthy green public schools.
Whoa, what's going on with her?
There's got to be an animal in the background.
We will sneezing. We will fight for healthy green public schools. The climate crisis is real, hitting us harder than ever. With limited time to act.
Wait, what does this have to do with schools?
Yeah. It's not global warming that's causing her to sweat bullets every time she sits up.
Let's see what number seven is.
Number six, we will fight for support for students, families, and our school communities.
That means nothing.
Every day, we see society's failure to support our communities. We work with students who are unhoused.
Oh, we have to end climate change and solve the homeless problems in order to renew this contract.
Oh, you could do that before lunch.
And number seven, we will fight for equitable school funding.
Even more money. It started with money and it ended with money.
It's all about the Benjamins. All right, we've got one more hour coming up on The John Phillips Show right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL Fan Festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.